Welcome to Ask the Experts, a monthly podcast taking on the latest questions around healthcare legislation and compliance.
Welcome to our Ask the Experts podcast. Today's guest is Crystal Bertner, Senior Compliance Specialist. Welcome to the podcast, Crystal.
Thank you, Shelley. It's great to be here.
For our first question, Crystal, we have a group that forgot to submit their PCORI payment in July. I'm reading on the IRS website that interest will be due on the late payment, but it doesn't tell you how to calculate the interest. Do you have any advice on how to calculate?
Yeah, sure. So if they have not received a notice about a penalty yet, they would just simply go ahead and file the late return. They don't need to worry about calculating the interest themselves, and it's not necessary to include a reason for the late filing. Now, if they do receive a penalty notice after filing the late return, they would then need to reply with an explanation to the IRS on why it was filed late, and the IRS would then determine if penalties would need to be applied.
We have two employees out on workers' comp. How should open enrollment be handled for both of these employees?
If these employees are still eligible for the health benefits, as is typically the case for a workers' compensation leave of absence, then they should be given the opportunity to make changes during open enrollment, the same as employees that are actively at work. The enrollment changes would be handled the same as those employees actively working. Just keep in mind that there may be some benefits that don't allow enrollment changes unless the employee is actively at work, but that would be for certain supplemental policies, so think benefits like life, disability, critical illness, etc.
Our next question. We have union and non-union employees. The union employees are carved out and have different benefits than the non-union employees. When counting employees for Medicare secondary payer, do we count employees of both populations as an aggregate, or are they counted individually since there are two separate classes?
When counting employees for the Medicare secondary payer determination, you'll want to make sure that you're looking at the total number of employees. That would be all full-time and part-time employees. And this is regardless of whether they are classed out and regardless of whether they are covered under the plan or not. Even though the union population is classed out and has different benefits, they would still be counted as part of the total number of employees for the Medicare secondary payer determination. If the union and non-union employee populations are 20 or more, then the group plan would be primary, Medicare would be secondary.
I'm curious if we have a form or document highlighting employer responsibilities for a level-funded plan.
We do have a few things that should help here. The first is a document that outlines different requirements for fully insured, self-insured, and level-funded plans. The second is a compliance calendar. We have one for both small and large group, and these do specifically highlight requirements as it pertains to level-funded plans.
What are the rules concerning terminating a spouse from an employee's coverage during open enrollment? Can the employee choose not to cover the spouse if the two parties are separated but not legally divorced?
In this situation, it's going to be best to get a copy of the actual divorce decree to remove the spouse. If the employee wants to do something else, I would advise that they work with their own attorney so that they understand the consequences of those actions. The employer may also want to consult with their own counsel if the employee still chooses to remove their spouse from the coverage. It is best if these requirements are in writing, such as in the employee handbook, summary plan description, and wrap document. The employer can then point to those documents as a requirement of the employee.
Next, we have a couple questions regarding ACA requirements for an ALE. We were not an ALE in 2023. We became one in 2024. Do we need to provide the 1095s for 2024?
If you were not an ALE, an applicable large employer, in 2023, then no action is required for 2024. If you became an ALE in 2024, you would then need to comply with the ACA in the 2025 calendar year. This is going to mean offering minimum essential coverage, coverage that is minimum value, and coverage that is affordable to at least 95% of your full-time employees in 2025. The 1094C form and 1095C forms for coverage in 2025 would then need to be completed and provided in March of 2026.
And it's also my understanding that all ALEs need to provide the 1095s regardless of whether they offer benefits. Is this correct?
Correct. So ALEs are required to report to the IRS, which is done through the 1094C form, as well as to their full-time employees, which is done through a 1095C form to each employee. And this is regardless of whether they actually offered health coverage or not.
We are an employer located in Texas. Is it legal if we contribute different amounts for employees located in Texas and yet another amount for employees that are located outside of Texas? Or would this be considered discriminatory?
You are able to set up different classes for employees located in different geographical locations, which may include different contributions for those working in Texas and then those working outside of Texas. You'll just want to make sure that the decision is not being made in a discriminatory way. You'll also want to make sure that you're doing the annual non-discrimination testing under Section 125 to confirm that the plans being offered are, in fact, not discriminatory. The vendor that you have your Section 125 plan set up through should be doing this for you.
If a group has terminated all coverage prior to receiving the MLR, medical loss ratio rebate, what do they do if they don't have a mechanism for distributing the rebate to employees?
When a group has terminated and they then receive an MLR rebate, they're still responsible for distributing the rebate to the participants of the plan unless the employer paid for 100% of the premium for all tiers of coverage. It is up to the employer on how they choose to do this. What they could do is look at the payroll and who was on the benefits before the plan terminated, and then issue the refund based on those records. They would then want to make sure to work with their CPA or accountant on how to best handle the tax implications.
Our last question for today, can owners of a company be exempt from paying in toward their health insurance? Two of the owners get their full amount of their health insurance benefit added to their W-2.
It is important to keep in mind that owners are not employees. There are some different ways for them to pay for their health insurance, though. Really, a conversation with their CPA or accountant or attorney would be best here. Much of this is going to depend on if the owners are sole proprietors, an LLP, LLC, or subchapter S-Corp. Their accountant will tell them the best way to pay for the coverage.
And then a secondary question to that, there's been another owner who is on Medicare Part B that we reimburse for the cost of the coverage. Are there any issues by doing this?
Assuming the employer has 20 or more total employees, the employer cannot reimburse for the Medicare premium. CMS says that incenting the employee in any way is a violation of Medicare secondary payer rules. The group health plan is the primary payer here.
Thank you very much, Crystal. We hope you found this podcast helpful and informative. If you have any questions, please contact your account manager or salesperson. This podcast is designed to highlight various employee benefit matters of general interest to our listeners. It is not intended to interpret laws or regulations or to address specific client situations. You should not act or rely on any information contained herein without seeking the advice of an attorney or tax professional. Thank you.